Thanks, Jeff, for that kind introduction. I've made a slight change to the title of my talk. I've called it Emergency Aquatic Animal Disease Response. And I'll focus on response because I think that's probably a bit more relevant to AHPNS. But the link is obvious. When we're talking about preparedness, we're talking about what we need to do to prepare so that we can respond effectively when the time comes. So that time normally looks something like this. It's a horror story. On the left-hand side is pilchard herpes virus. That was a disease outbreak that occurred in Australia in the 90s along southern Australia. And it had a massive impact on wild pilchard populations. A more recent example at the top right is some dead oysters that were killed by Australian herpes virus in an estuary in New South Wales, Australia. That was first detected in Australia in late 2010. And bottom right, some dead abalone. Again, another herpes virus. Seems to be a favourite flavour of pathogen in Australia. And these are some abalone that are washed ashore after the wild populations had been affected with AVG. And that occurred along a stretch of about 200 kilometres of coast. So I think it's always good to keep in mind that wild populations can be affected by disease. So what should happen next? We're presented with a serious disease event like this. What do we do? And when we're thinking about what we should do, I think this graph might help to guide our actions. This graph shows an invasion curve. On the y-axis is the area occupied by the pathogen. Along the x-axis is time. So with the progression of time, the pathogen spreads and covers a bigger area until it covers its full possible range. Overlaid on that invasion curve some response phases. So the first one isn't really a response phase, it's prevention. So that's where we're trying to prevent the entry of damaging pathogens, and we have arrangements in place to do that. If we get an entry of... Okay, so we've got entry of an invasive species, and it starts to spread. In the first phase here, we have the possibility of eradication. So we can eradicate, possibly, because there's limited area that's affected. After a while, the pathogen spreads further, so our options become more limited. So perhaps containment is the best option because parts of the region or country are affected. So we might want to restrict the spread of the pathogen to those areas that are already affected, preserve freedom for other areas. But then after a while, we have spread to all possible parts or most of the possible parts of our production areas. And in this phase here, it's called asset-based protection, but I'll be calling it management and mitigation later on in my talk. So basically, what happens here is that the disease is spread to its full extent, it's endemic, and we have to learn to live with it. We generally learn to live with it at a business level, so a farm would put in place measures to either treat affected animals or to prevent the entry of the disease into their facilities, either through biosecurity measures or, for example, getting pathogen-free stock. But why I'm really showing this graph is the bar along the bottom. So these are indicative economic returns. Of course, it's impossible to estimate for a particular, and it would vary depending on the nature of the pathogen that you're dealing with and the circumstances of the incursion. But some indicative figures for prevention, we get about 100-to-1 return on our investment. For eradication, about a 25-to-1 return on our investment. For containment, about a 5-to-10-to-1 return on our investment. And then the poorest return on our investment is through mitigation and management. And that seems sensible because there's ongoing costs for treatment and losses to productivity. So when we're thinking about how we want to respond, especially in the early phases, we might want to think about where we want to be on this graph. So in this presentation, I'll describe a definition of what an emergency is, because a disease event isn't necessarily an emergency. I'll talk about what happens in an aquatic animal disease emergency response, and I'll summarise some basic principles that I think are important for effective response. So what's a disease emergency? So it's an incident that could have a significant impact. So an economic impact, either production or trade, or on the environment or human health. It might not actually kill animals. It could just cut you off from your markets. So that could be a trade impact. But in the case of AHPNS, I think it's quite clear that there's an impact on productivity and quite a serious impact. The second point about an emergency is that response action is needed to mitigate the impact. So we need to do something to contain spread of a disease or to eradicate it. In the case of AHPNS, there's some uncertainty about whether this syndrome has a infectious etiology or not. But for the rest of this presentation, I'm just going to assume that it does. And rather than discuss whether it is or isn't throughout the talk. So the reason for that response action is to protect our industry and to protect its productivity. If we have an outbreak, we want to manage that outbreak and return our industries to normal operation as soon as possible. So if we have an emergency response, there's three basic possibilities: containment, eradication, or mitigation and management. How we go about implementing those responses will differ on every occasion. That's almost certain, because every disease event or incident will probably differ. It'll differ because some of these factors. So whether it occurs in a closed or open system, the distribution of the disease, how early on that invasion curve did we detect it, the existing knowledge of the disease, so for example, an understanding of how the disease spreads. In the case of AHPNS, we have very little knowledge in that regard. The tools that are available, one of the most important tools are our diagnostic tools. In the case of AHPNS, we're fortunate that we have a case definition and we have a diagnostic tool, that's histopathology, so we can use that. The potential consequences. In the case of AHPNS, it appears that the potential consequences are very severe, so the cost-benefit of responding is likely to be quite high. And also we need to consider the technical feasibility. Sometimes there'll just be some matters that mean that a response isn't feasible. So going back to pilchard herpes virus, in that case, the disease front was moving at about 30 kilometres a day, and the opportunity for responding in wild populations was almost nil. So what happens in an emergency disease response? So these are the five phases that I'll use to describe a response: disease freedom, alert, incident investigation, emergency response, and recovery. So in disease freedom, this is where we've got sustainable production, access to markets, and we'll have ongoing risk mitigation activities to protect that status, to stop the entrance of new or emerging disease threats. And some of the activities to protect our freedom would be national quarantine, so pre-border and border, regional and farm level biosecurity surveillance programs, both for early detection of diseases, but also to feed into our disease reporting systems, which substantiate our disease status and help us to access markets. In the alert phase, this is where there's suspicion of an emergency disease and there should be notification to a responsible authority. That suspicion might be originate from a farmer, most likely. They're the ones that are observing their animals, or it could be through a veterinary officer or a fisheries officer. But the important point is that someone has to see a problem and report it. Once there's notification, there should be a collection of samples for preliminary diagnosis. And there should also be initial steps to prevent spread of the disease. So, for example, voluntary quarantine while an investigation is being carried out. And also there should be initial tracing of dangerous contacts. So what I mean is tracing forward to see if there's stock or equipment that could be contaminated that have moved to other facilities or farms, and tracing back to see where the likely source of an infection may have come from. The third phase is incident investigation, and this is where we determine if the incident relates to an emergency disease. We'd also activate investigation protocols, so that would be part of our preparedness and contingency planning, and we'd obtain this information to inform possible response actions. So the activities would include preliminary diagnosis, so perhaps by a regional laboratory, and referral to a reference laboratory, so for example a national laboratory for confirmation. There'd probably be convening of the technical advisory group. This is what would happen in Australia, where we'd get a multidisciplinary team together to consider all the diagnostic information. If we confirmed a disease, then we'd have to consider our international reporting requirements in line with international obligations. And probably, if we're exporting products, or possibly, direct contact with trading partners. So in instances where affected premises had exported stock, we might want to contact our trading partners directly to let them know that there's a problem. Also at this point, there would be quarantine of affected premises and tracing and surveillance would continue. So the emergency response phase. So this would be activated when there's a decision to contain or eradicate the disease. And it continues to until the disease has been eradicated or contained, or a decision is made that it can't be. So this would include activation of contingency plans, and importantly, it would include agreement on a response objective. So what are we actually trying to achieve? As part of supporting that response objective, we need a response plan. How are we going to achieve it? We'd activate command and control structures, so control centres that would be tasked with implementing that response plan. And there'd also be quarantine areas declared, so infected, restricted and control areas and movement controls in force. It would be ridiculous to try and eradicate a disease while at the same time not taking measures to prevent its further spread. Also, tracing would need to continue to determine confirmed and potential locations of the disease, and this would be an ongoing task as new suspected or infected premises were identified. Surveillance would need to be undertaken to define the extent of the disease, detect new outbreaks, and also to adjust quarantine areas and monitor the implementation of our response plan. If stamping out was the response objective, there would probably need to be destruction of host animals or slaughter if that was suitable and safe. Disposal of destroyed animals and also decontamination of facilities and equipment. These points can be major undertakings. So if our response is successful, we'd then move into recovery, which would involve proof of freedom, a recommencement of production and a resumption of trade. So, to summarise, some basic principles of emergency response. The little diagram on this slide is from an FAO guidance document on good emergency management practice. They've got four phases of an emergency response that they use: prevent, detect, respond and recover, supported by preparedness in the middle. That's fine, but I think it's a little simplistic. And I think the response phase needs to include some elements more specifically. So my preference is for the more complicated phases on the left-hand side. Prevention, so a program of risk reduction measures to start with, so hopefully we don't have to respond. Detection, which is important. If we can detect an incursion rapidly, it means our options for response are much better. Something that we haven't heard much about in this meeting yet is containment. It's important to have early implementation of controls to prevent spread. If we detect something but then don't act, then we're not going to have many options for controlling the disease at a later time. We need to investigate thoroughly and define the nature of the extent of the outbreak. And this is really important so we can decide what actions we can and should take. And I think it's possibly the most important aspect of emergency response is decide. That involves a lot of people, perhaps political intervention. And if a decision isn't made on an appropriate response objective, on a plan that will support that objective, then we won't be very successful. If we do take a decision to respond, then we need to bring together rapidly people and resources. And this is really where our preparedness will be found wanting if it's not up to scratch, because there'll be a need to bring a lot of people together from their day jobs to a new role and land them in a control centre or in the field to undertake a role that they may not be familiar with. And the last phase, recover. So prevent, detect, contain, investigate, decide, respond, recover. There's plenty of information on emergency response. These are just some examples. The document in the middle is the FAO Good Emergency Management Practice Guide that I mentioned. That's available on the internet. And on the right-hand side is the Australian Aquatic Veterinary Emergency Plan, AquaVet Plan, which is available on our website. So back to this graph again. And I think we can, if we assume that AHPNS, if we assume for a moment that it has an infectious etiology, then we can see where some countries in the region currently are on this invasion curve. So on the right-hand side would probably be China and Vietnam. Their opportunities for eradication and containment have probably passed. In the middle is probably Thailand. AHPNS is occurring in the east of the country, so there's possibly an opportunity for containing it to that area of the country. And there appears to be several countries that haven't reported AHPNS, so they're quite possibly still on this part of the invasion curve. So they still have opportunities to detect AHPNS if it occurs, well, at first prevent its entry if there's any activities that are risky and might allow the entry of AHPNS, and also to ensure that arrangements are in place to detect AHPNS if it occurs so that eradication or containment could be undertaken. But of course, one of our major pieces of information that we need is whether AHPNS is an infectious etiology. So I'd hope in our working groups we can consider that. And if we can't, if we don't have good evidence that would provide us with a strong working hypothesis, I hope those groups can come up with some ways of undertaking some work to help us find out whether it is an infectious etiology or not. So that doesn't mean finding out what the cause is, but bringing together some evidence that would convince us one way or the other whether it's an infectious etiology or not. Thank you.